You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
Welcome to College Football Now, the podcast. I'm Brant Parsons. Matt Marshall on the line. Football season is back. The unofficial kickoff to preseason college football last week, the SEC Media Days, but we're not going to talk about that for a while. ACC has big news. We're not going to talk about that just yet. There's a bigger story out there, a story which I honestly did not expect to happen. I really thought it would go the other way, but the Big 12 came out and said they're going to look at possible expansion. Not saying they're going to, not saying they're not going to, but, you know, leaving it open, shop around a little bit, I guess is what they're saying out there. Right, Matt?
Yeah, what they basically did is they left the back door open. So if they want to let someone come in, I think that's something they're going to consider. And this was a little interesting of a bit of a news because I think a lot of us felt like this wasn't going to happen. They felt like maybe the Big 12 was going to kind of say, we're not going to expand. We're going to put that in the back burner for the next, you know, maybe 10 years or so until their current contract came up with the television network. But obviously, they feel like they need to take a look at this. It was a unanimous vote by the board of directors, which are composed of the school presidents. So for them to have unanimous vote, there wasn't anyone in the room who stood out and opposed this. So they feel like now's the time to start looking at candidates. So let the campaigning begin.
And the benefit of doing it this way is if they decide not to expand, then they don't have to if they end up not having the votes to expand, because obviously anytime you get into that talk, you have Texas and Oklahoma and those votes come into play. But like you said, they're leaving the back door open, and now they get to be dined and wooed and be built up by a bunch of schools that want to get in. A couple of those schools here in the state, USF, UCF, obviously in Orlando, both think they're going to have a chance to get in, or at least going to make their case. I would say if you look at the landscape, maybe what, 7-8 teams that could actually be in play for this, it's going to be a move up kind of thing. They're not going to be able to poach from the other conferences, especially with the ACC deal now coming up, which we'll talk about. They're not going to be able to take a Florida State or any of those rumors out there. They're going to be bringing teams up if they go ahead and do this. The question is it going to be 2? Is it going to be 3? Is it going to be 4? And then if it is, everybody wants to know who are the schools that are going to be brought to the Big 12.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the big what if, you know, or who, I guess who, like you mentioned, is going to be. I think, you know, they said anywhere from 2 to 4 teams. I think that maybe we'll try to get 4. They, you know, every other conference in the Power 5 has 14 teams. I think they would love to get to that number. But my point, I think, is I think they should try to keep it at 2. Because I really do think you want to make sure you get the best possible candidates for your conference. Bob Bousby, the commissioner, yesterday said that the Big 12 was a family, and all their members were a big family, and they want to make sure they add someone to the family that really kind of strengthens the family and makes it better. If you don't have 4 solid candidates, if you don't have 4 people to step in and do that, why just grab 4 teams just to throw in there? Why not stick with 2 who may be better and maybe a little more solid and add those to the conference as well? That's why I caution people when I say this is not a guarantee this is going to be a full-on expansion, because the Big 12 may look at all these candidates and they may say, listen, no one steps up as a strong enough candidate for us to go ahead and add it this time.
And you and I and everybody else, we watch the games on the field, but I think what matters with this is what happens with dollar signs. And if you look at most of the other expansions, especially the ones that have happened recently, you have the Big Ten going into big markets to spread their network. I don't know if they benefited by bringing in better teams, but they at least benefited their network. They bettered their bottom line. You can say the ACC did the same by going and getting some big market schools, expanding the reach of the ACC. Pac-12, same kind of thing. But those schools, there was an argument to bring them in. And you could say, Rutgers, why are we bringing Rutgers in? Well, that's, you know, the New York, New Jersey market. Why bring Maryland in? Well, that's the DC market, that area. That you don't mind sharing money with teams or schools that are going to be bringing money in. But if you have schools now, you're looking at like the second tier of teams available out there. And these schools in the Big 12, I think you would agree with me, they're looking at this and saying, all right, if I'm going to have to share my money with the other schools. They better be bringing it. Are there some schools out there that you look at and say, you know what, they can actually add to the product that is the Big 12?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, I think the top one on my list right now is BYU. I know Bob Bowsby said yesterday that there's a possibility they could add a couple member schools in a football-only capacity. If that, and BYU would fit that mold perfectly because, you know, again, you know, they have a large fan base. They would be able to attract a lot of fans. They already have their own television network, which is in like 65 million homes, you know, on DirecTV and some of the cable networks. So they have a familiarity with television. They can draw a crowd with that as well, thanks to the Church of the Latter-day Saints. So I think that would, they would be, as a football-only capacity, would be a huge get for the Big 12. I also think maybe you look at a school like a Houston, a program right now. It's in the state of Texas. I know one of the draws is, you know, the Big 12 already has, you know, four teams in the state of Texas. Do they want to add another one and have to share in that recruiting, you know, the recruiting landscape? But I think Houston, you know, is one of those programs that is on the rise. We see the, we saw what the football program did last year with Tom Herman going 13-1. They've got a brand new stadium. The basketball program's kind of on the rise. They would be an attractive offer as well. I think, you know, maybe some of the other schools being mentioned, you look at a Memphis, you know, maybe if you want to expand your footprint a little bit more towards the east. I think West Virginia's kind of lonely out there in Morgantown. I think they'd love to have a school maybe that's a little bit more geographically closer to them to establish some sort of rivalry. You could do that with either Memphis or Cincinnati, or even Connecticut. You know, the problem with Connecticut is, listen, football is secondary in that market for them. Really, it would be the basketball programs that would add to the Big 12. I'm not necessarily sure the Big 12 wants just to add a team for basketball, you know, purposes only. I know they would get that Hartford television market, but I don't think Hartford is anything next to New York, so to speak, when it comes to those television numbers. So right there, those are probably maybe the four or five at the top. I mean, I think UCF is going to be there, obviously, for its television, its growing television market here as well. But I'm just not sure 100% sold that the Knights would be a given to get into the league.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to that in a second. But the BYU thing, I think it's key. It would have to be football only because, you know, BYU has the thing. They do not play any sporting events on Sundays. And I can't see the Big 12 giving up some of their, you know, you look about basketball and probably even some baseball and softball deals where they have deals to play games on Sundays throughout the year. So, but a football only, I think, works with the Big 12 if they go BYU. And you talked about a bunch of schools, and it took you a while to get around to UCF. And I know that UCF Nation out there, they may think they're higher up on that list than they are. I tend to agree with you, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but I don't know that the Big 12 is looking this way. And I think possibly part of that is you almost think that the UCF-USF would have to be a package deal if they were to take them both. And I don't know that the Big 12 wants both or even the other one. But what does UCF, just staying right here in Orlando where we're located, what does UCF have to offer the Big 12 other than the TV deal that can even compete with the BYUs and the Houstons and the Cincinnati's and even the Memphis and all that? If UCF fans are going to get excited about this and have a chance, what do you see UCF as having a benefit? Is there anything beyond the TV market?
Well, yeah, I think obviously, I mean, one of the things that UCF can't really control but is definitely attractive is the recruiting. I mean, and there are teams right now want to get in the state of Florida. They want to get their foothold in here for recruiting and have a school in here, to have schools like Texas and Texas Tech, and Oklahoma and some of those other schools coming down here to Florida to play every so often would be really attractive when it comes to recruiting, because then you coaches could go out here a couple days early, maybe go and hit some of the top recruits they have as well. I think as the school goes, I think obviously you see the football program is growing. You saw what they were able to do in the Fiesta Bowl a couple years ago. I know they're coming off an 0-12 season, but you got a lot of buzz with Scott Frost coming in here as well. You look at the facilities, the football stadium is pretty much brand new, so to speak. You know, it's kind of an attractive option there. They've added some more buildings. They're improving some of the things as well around there. We look at the indoor practice facility. You know, they're getting some things like that. I think that helps. I think what hurts a little bit is the basketball program. I think the basketball program hasn't been to the NCAA tournament since 2004. I know they've got a new head coach, Johnny Dawkins. He's got a little bit of name recognition, but I think that doesn't really add anything to the Big 12. And I think another thing that really hurts is distance. I know people don't talk a lot about this, but it takes a lot to travel around. And if you're UCF and you've got to go up to Lawrence, Kansas to play a basketball game, it's going to, you know, that's a long trip, and it's going to take some money to do that. And I think some of these other programs are thinking about that as well. So I think if you're looking at UCF, there's a lot to offer. Obviously, you know, we know that they have a great student body. They have a lot of enthusiasm, and you're seeing that name recognition getting there. I just don't know if they're right there right now to be there.
And I did a road trip with my family through Big 12 country, and I can tell you some of those places – they're out there, and it's not easy to get there by road, and it's not easy to get there by plane. It'll be interesting to see how that goes and how UCF would deal with that, even on their own aspect of having to then travel there for the other sports. We know how football works, but then you have to the non-revenue sports. Then all of a sudden, if you're in the Big 12, if they would take as an all-sport addition. We're going to move on from the Big 12, but before we do, I want to ask you your prediction today, July, whatever this is, July 20th, 2016. What do you think, if you had to make your guess, and I'll give mine too, but if you had to make a guess what you think the Big 12 will end up doing, where is your own personal radar pointing on this one?
I think if the Big 12 is going to expand, I think it's going to be two teams. I think they'll take a BYU, let's say, and maybe a Houston. I think those are two, you know, big markets. Houston's a top 10 television market. Obviously, adding them would be big. And I think BYU, if it's a football-only type situation, I think they would love to have, you know, a program like that. Listen, BYU plays everywhere, right? I mean, they play – they're one of – as an independent, they go anywhere and play anybody. So they're not afraid to play good quality teams. So I think BYU would be an attractive deal if they're going to expand. If they go to four – you could see UCF somehow slip in. I just feel like they're not at that point just yet.
And I'm going to go opposite of you and say that they are going to expand too also, but it'll be Memphis and Cincinnati. And I see it because geographical, bridging that gap to West Virginia, getting a little bit of a foothold in the middle. Memphis up and coming football, you hope they can continue at least the work that's been done there. Obvious basketball powers. But BYU, I think they're limited by some of their schedule demands. And I think Big 12 may be looking to go beyond. You can't add one football only and one all sports. So I think that's why they skip out on BYU. And I think to get to sweeten a deal to get Texas to agree, you can't let Houston in. So I'll guess that they're going to expand, but I'll say it'll be with Memphis and Cincinnati. And sorry, UCF fans, I feel terrible for you. I touched upon something that we are recording this Wednesday evening. In fact, I would say we probably are both watching the Cubs game in the background, just to give you an idea when we're recording this. But tomorrow, Thursday, the ACC will be having a press conference at the start of their media days. The ESPN president will be there. This is going to be the announcement that has been reported by everybody for a couple days now, but they're waiting for their media days to finally make it official. But the ACC... going to get the ACC network, going to partner with ESPN, going to have digital, a bigger digital presence. Olympic sports in the ACC are going to have a huge digital presence. This was a deal, and you and I have talked off air about it, but this is a deal that the ACC really had been wanting and waiting for, and it kind of solidifies their place in the Power Five, and I think comes with a little bit of insurance and stability, knowing that this deal is going to take place and the money that's going to come along with it.
Yeah, I think when you look at this, you know, it's been a long time coming. They've been talking about this for a while. I think this would have happened a lot sooner if the landscape hadn't changed a little bit, if we hadn't seen the cord-cutting situations where, you know, fans are getting rid of their cable, you know, going with more online streaming services. And I think you're also seeing that ESPN struggles, and not just ESPN, but all the major networks struggles financially, you know, making some cost-cutting moves of their own, you know, because for a while there, it was a pretty much a big heyday where money was flying everywhere, you know, for the rights to do NFL, NBA, college football, all that. So I think this is a big deal. I think the bigger deal really is going to be if it's as if what's been reported that they're going to extend their grant of rights deal with their member schools through the 2035-36 season. To me, that provides the ACC with a tremendous amount of stability, because that means that if anyone wants to leave the ACC and go somewhere, let's say like the Big 12, they're going to have to forfeit their television grant, their rights up for the remainder of their current grant of rights deal. Which, and that's a tremendous amount of money, and millions of dollars, and no school is going to make that move. So to have that as part of this deal, if it is going to take place, would really got to make sure these schools are locked in. Schools like Florida State and Clemson, which have been rumored years ago to be possible Big 12 expansion targets. So this, to me, is a big deal. Don't get me wrong. The money's going to be good. We've seen what the SEC Network and the Big Ten Network have been able to do for those conferences, and that's going to probably give them a huge boost for each of these individual schools. But I think, to me, the grant of rights, if that happens, is definitely one of the bigger points of this this deal and this announcement.
Yeah, and you talked about the Big Ten Network. We know how well it's done. We obviously know how well SEC Network has done. The Pac-12 has gotten into the game. Their fledgling network is growing and adding to the Pac-12 product. The ACC had been wanting this, and I didn't know if this was going to happen. I mean, I guess at some point you had to figure ESPN realized that they needed to do something to make sure they're keeping the ACC happy, especially because there's so much basketball product that comes from the ACC. But with the money drying up and everything slowing up and people cutting the cord, that's why I think the digital component of this is interesting and advantageous to everybody, including ESPN, ACC, and fans, because they're adding to – They're playing a new marketplace and giving you chances to see their product digitally, which is what people want nowadays.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, that's another attractive part of this deal, possibly, is the digital network side of it, which means you can start streaming your games, and not just football, not just basketball, but the Olympic-style sports, you know, streaming them live on an app. You know, that seems to be the direction we're going as a country, where, you know, people don't want to watch their sports through the traditional avenues. They want to watch it some, you know, on demand, on the go. And I think that's where a network like this would help out. I also think, too, it really kind of provides a sense of identity for the ACC. I think you don't feel like you're just the also-ran with the SECs and the Big Ten. Now you have your own network, and now you have your own personalities. You know, SEC has Paul Feinbaum. The ACC will have someone, I'm sure, as well, like that, who will be there to kind of, you know, stand up for the league. So I think that's something important for the ACC, which doesn't want to fall behind and be the third or fourth best league in a Power Five. So I think this gets them up there into the discussion. I don't necessarily think it puts them right next to the SEC and Big Ten at this point, but I think it really helps making their cause.
It keeps them in the game, I think. And then, like you said, like we've said a few times, it also helps knowing that you're protecting from people leaving the conference. But please, 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 no more Paul Feinbaums. No ACC version of Paul Feinbaum. We nobody wants that. Not even Nick Saban wants that. Speaking of Nick Saban, how's that for a segue? Matt, you were in Birmingham, or not Birmingham, in Hoover, wherever it is, up in Alabama, for the SEC Media Days. 4 days of SEC gluttony, coaches, players, and everything else. The emphasis maybe wasn't on football. If you were looking for football talk, it was pretty bland and kind of didn't get a lot out of it. But there were some interesting storylines about things happening off the field. And I think that ended up taking over what was the SEC Media Day attention, is some of those off-the-field issues within the SEC.
Yeah, you know, I think that when we look back at the 4 days that was the SEC Love Fest of Media Days, I think, you know, you can look back and say, you know, I think the tone was a little more somber, so to speak, with the idea that, you know, again, some of the off-the-field issues really kind of took precedent. You talk about Ole Miss with their in the middle of an NCAA investigation, for possible legal benefits by some of their players. You look at what's going on at Mississippi State, you know, with the school allowing Jeffrey Simmons, a 5-star athlete who was, you know, arrested for assaulting a woman, you know, allowing him to enroll in school and his past. You know, all the way to Tennessee and their issues with the Title IX lawsuit they just settled. It just seemed like everything was kind of centered around that. And then there was also the little bit of the idea of what's going on at Baylor. I think a lot of schools are concerned. They saw what happened at the Baylor situation that basically caused, you know, the school to fire Art Briles, their athletic director to resign, and their president to kind of get reassigned. I think there's some concerns when it comes to domestic violence and assault, which they should be. And I think that was some of the tone that we saw this past week at the SEC Media Days.
If you had to pick any of the winners of the SEC Media Days, and then I'll also ask you to pick some of the losers, but who are some of the coaches or even players? I'm putting you on the spot because we didn't really preset this as a topic, but it kind of popped into my head. But who are some of the players or coaches that you left SEC Media Days thinking that they had done well there, that perhaps they would be, if you were to consider winners of SEC Media Days, who would you put in that group?
Well, I would definitely put Arkansas's Brett Bielema. I mean, very funny, you know, a lot of quips during his session, you know, really got, you know, in a period where everyone was really missing having Steve Spurrier there, having Bielema there to kind of add some humor, I think when you got a sea of coach speak, was really kind of refreshing as well. I also think, you know, I look at a guy like Les Miles, LSU coach, you know, really spoke poignantly about the situation that's going on in Louisiana with some of the police shootings. This was before the recent shootings of police officers, but really talked a little bit about the role of a coach and how you get your players to really kind of stand up and have their voice be heard. And then I think also Leonard Fournette. I think Leonard Fournette was a guy who, spoke a lot. The LSU running back spoke really well about what that means to him. He went through the whole Hurricane Katrina situation years ago, so he knows what it's like when a community is hurting. And I think he really spoke highly on that as well.
And so we got to go negative. Was anybody, and I have a few feeling of at least one of these that you might answer, but anybody that you felt lost SEC Media Days or came out not looking as good as they should or didn't perform up to what you would hope for at a Media Days, I guess is a way of putting it.
Well, I think Dan Mullen, you know, Mississippi State coach, didn't do himself any favors talking about Jeffrey Simmons. I think, you know, he kind of basically said the idea to accept him and suspend him for one game wasn't really his decision as much as it was by the school. To me, that's just kind of passing the buck. You know what I mean? I think he should have done a little bit better. I think, you know, when you look at Nick Saban, I think Nick Saban not addressing the issue with Cam Robinson, the suspension possibly of Cam Robinson, why he didn't suspend him and Hootie Jones after their arrest was a little bit. And then, you know, I thought Paul Feinbaum, I thought SEC Network in general was a loser. I felt like they didn't handle situations very well. And I think they spent so much time patting themselves on the back for having Paul Feinbaum ask a question to Nick Saban in a one-on-one situation, mind you, not in a room like we were set in. I think that, to me, kind of was the losers of the week.
Well, as somebody who was watching this back in Central Florida, and I watched all of the SEC Media Day coverage on SEC Network, except for the stuff that wasn't on SEC Network where I could turn it to just a regular ESPN channel, it was not good. It was you figure for every coach there, you would have thought every team was going 12-0, everybody was great, every coach handled everything perfectly except for Saban, and then they didn't really attack Saban, they attacked the media for not asking the question they wanted to, and then the whole Paul Feinbaum stage thing where just everything went downhill. But the SEC Network, that was tough watching. It was just basically a bunch of cheerleaders. And I'm looking forward to watching the Big Ten Media Days on the Big Ten Network next week and see if that's any different. I watched a little bit of the Pac-12 Network Media Days, but they don't have the same kind of setup as the SEC. So there wasn't as much, you know, maybe hometown cheering on that one. But the SEC Network, that was tough. Tough to watch because you're watching these coaches and they're speaking most coach speak, and to just have the analysts after everyone say, "Oh, he answered those questions great," and then it left a sour taste in my mouth, especially when they started attacking you guys in the media room who weren't able to get a question that probably 30, 40 people wanted to, but Saban wouldn't call on you. That's my little rant, and and perhaps it's just because I want a non-biased presentation of it. You're not going to get that with the network that shares the name with the conference. But I don't think they did as good a job as they could have in covering SEC Media Days. And you didn't watch it. You were there. But I think we kind of – you guys at the Media Days probably got a feel for how it was going. And obviously those of us watching it on TV got that – our own feel for it.
Yeah, I would say so. And like I said, I just think, you know, one of the things that really stood out was, you know, some of the coaches really did a good job of filibustering, you know. It's taking up, they had a limited amount of time to speak with the media and the print media and online media, and they used up a lot of their time answering questions in a long-winded sort of fashion, using a lot of coach speak. And I think that they, you know, they're getting smarter and smarter about that, and I think it really limited the amount of questions that we could ask at the time.
And Jim McElwain, I think three of his first four questions were about Nick Saban or something. I was like, wow, really, guys? Come on. Everybody wanted to ask him about Nick Saban. And so, like I said, if you're looking for football, there wasn't a lot of football talk beyond coach speak. But SEC Media Days is the unofficial kickoff. We also had Big 12 Media Days this week, Pac-12. This week coming up this week, we saw the ACC Media Days. As I said, Big 10 Media Days are next week. And then you'll start seeing camps start to trickle in. I saw a thing on the TV underneath the Cubs game that I was watching while we were doing this podcast. It said 43 days to opening night of college football, that Thursday night. And you and I don't call that open night because we can't wait to watch the Sydney Cup or Australia Cup or Australia Open or whatever it is on August 27th. But it is getting closer, and we're getting in full swing here. We're going to start doing these podcasts very regularly as we move forward. And thank you, Big 12, for giving us stuff to talk about for the first one back. And thank you, ACC and SEC. But I'm curious, and we'll finish up with it, but I'm just curious how long this Big 12 expansion talk will carry on until it kind of takes a backseat to the games coming up. But you have to wonder how long the Big 12 will let it linger out. It'll probably be through the whole season before they would vote either way on it. But you don't want it to overshadow things. But I think it's going to be, at least in the college football world, into the discussion for at least the present time until camps start opening.
Yeah, I think this is going to be something we talk about probably at least for the next couple of weeks. I think eventually what will happen is the camps will open up and that will kind of die down a little bit. I think it will always be there. And I think they're supposed to meet, the Big 12 said they will meet maybe in November. They could meet earlier if they really decide they have enough information on the candidates. But I think it's going to be October, November before they maybe sit down and have a meeting of the board of directors and maybe actually come up with a decision. So right in the middle of about three quarters of the way through the football season.
And even then, that meeting may not give any answers, especially depending on how Texas feels about what the board comes up with. But it gave us stuff to keep us the appetite satisfied as we wait for the season to start. I'm excited for it to come, not too excited, because we got a lot of work to get ready for it. But it is getting closer, Matt. Summertime's ending for us.
Yeah, it is, and it's time now to start talking. Start getting into the full swing of college football season.
So subscribe to our podcast. Email us, Twitter us, Facebook Live, all that stuff. But listen to all of our podcasts simply by subscribing. And we will continue to do this all season long. Many times a week is the plan for now. So for Matt Marshall, I'm Brent Parsons. Thanks for listening to College Football Now podcast. We'll talk to you again very, very soon.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Marshall. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.